Fashion.
I'm Abby.
I'm Evan.
And I'm Katie.
And you're listening to The Fashion Hags.
We love to love
and love to hate
all things fashion.
Hey. Oh, hello, Fashion Hags. Let's start again. What was that?
You tried to cover it up. It didn't work.
Like a little squirrel took a little sneeze.
It was a very muffled halfway between a cough and a sneeze.
Oh, boy. Wait, do we keep it in or do we keep going? I said keep going.
Yeah. It's this super dry apple cider that Abby...
It's the super extra dry one, too, so it's extra tart.
Yeah. Abby so graciously supplied.
Yeah. Left field cider.
Hi, guys. It's a fashion egg.
Yeah. Here we go. We're figuring it out.
We'll get that squirrel out of here.
We
are a little squirrely right now.
Yeah. Squirrel, we don't have a microphone for you. Get out of here.
Oh. Hi. It's episode 66.
Yeah. We're recording in the time machine. This will come up for a while because Mr. Magic Charm's off again. We're going to talk about his latest adventure in this episode.
Yeah.
He'll be off for another adventure. So we're recording before.
Yeah, we're banking. We're summer banking.
Yeah. So this will probably come out in July sometime, I'm guessing.
Who knows what will have happened between now and when.
Between now and then.
When you're listening to it.
Yeah. But for now. For now, we're here.
Here we are. We're here now.
Yes. And we have alcohol, so it's a good day.
Things are good.
Yeah.
Abby, what's new?
Not much. I recently, what they call solo parented for a few days.
Oh.
It's just the one parent. I can't call it being a single parent because that is not.
That's not what it is.
That's not what it is. It was just me by myself with the kids. We're selling our house. So I decided to just try and make it easy on everybody. Me and the two kids and the dog just got out of town for like 5 days, six days. And then we did a bunch of showings and stuff. Dave stayed here and helped with a bunch of showings and stuff. So we had like the house cleaned and there's a bunch of stuff being stored in my in-law's garage and we cleaned everything up as much as we could. We threw away so much shit and there's still so much to throw away.
Yeah, that's nice. Get the kids and the dog out.
Yeah, so just get out of here. Like there's no way we weren't able to keep it in like a presentable, condition. It's not going to happen.
Have one meal and forget it.
Yeah, exactly. It's fine. Let the kids be awake for 5 minutes and it will be trashed, guaranteed. So it was fine. It was me and the kids who got away, went over to the island. So there was two ferry rides, a whole day of travel, an elderly dog, like me doing all the driving. It's not that much driving, but still.
It's a long day.
It's a long day with a baby and a toddler. Everybody did really well, so it was totally fine. The weather cooperated, which was great. We got a couple beach days in, which was really nice. One of my children went into the ocean fully clothed, and the other one refused all clothing. So I'll split the difference.
It's a yin and yang. Fine.
Yeah.
So come see.
Yeah, come down. It's fine. I had zero Fox the whole time. Did not care. We ate so badly. We watched so much television. Everyone was filthy. We watched Beauty and the Beast, I don't know, twice a day for 5 days. And also The Lion King and Toy Story and Aladdin.
Oh, classics.
Yeah, because I have all the VHSs in like the big plastic, like
the clicky, the good containers. What's the classic
the
collection?
Vault from the vault.
Yeah, from the Disney vault.
But these are like the original ones like that I bought in like 1992.
Oh, shit.
So, because we still have those, because it's like all the shit from my childhood is at this house. Like it's all the cutlery and sheets and everything from my entire life is at that house.
I can vouch for this.
Because it's all the like
collection there is spectacular. Unparalleled.
We lived overseas growing up, there was no English television. So whenever somebody would go to an English speaking country, we just buy VHSs. And over the 10, 15 years we lived there, we amassed hundreds. And I'm not exaggerating. Katie has seen. There's like two and a half Billy bookshelves from IKEA.
In.
Like two tall ones and the half one full of and like triple stacked.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. There's
on top of each other.
There's
something for everybody. Like we did not discriminate. We would buy from like the previously viewed. We would buy the brand new. We would buy the weird foreign shit. We'd like tape stuff. somebody, like one of my cousins would like record all the SNLs. So we have a bunch of SNLs on like a VHS that are just recorded off TV.
That's too. Fun. Oh, and old commercials?
Yes.
That's
the
great.
Weirdest shit. So anyway, so I got the good like Disney movies out for the kids and we watched those. That was very satisfying. And I remembered all of them. And as I was watching them, haven't seen them in 20 years. They are seared into my mind for eternity. Did not miss a beat with any of them.
Did you watch like Sleeping Beauty?
No, we don't have Sleeping Beauty. But I watched Maleficent today.
Mm.
I'd already seen it, but I...
They're making the sequel right now.
Are they? Mm-hmm. Interesting. It was pretty great. I enjoyed Maleficent.
Mm-hmm.
I enjoy Angelina Jolie.
I really enjoy her. I know she's got her issues and she's problematic and I know other people don't like her so much, but I really like her. Mm-hmm. I think she's great.
Where is Salt 2?
I want
Salt 2.
Give me Salt 2.
Is she still in the forest after jumping out?
Out of the helicopter.
Into the lake.
Into the frozen river. Spoiler alert. She gets away.
That movie's been out for damn near a decade. It's your fault.
If you haven't seen it by now, it's fantastic.
I have not seen it.
It's a great action movie.
We gave you very little context for that. It's an action movie.
It's really good.
Situation could have happened anywhere in the movie.
It's true.
Save your breath.
There you go. You're going to watch The Staircase is what you're going
to
watch.
I've already watched it. I don't even need to watch it.
The new True Crime
thing.
Is it spooky?
No, but the guy's a creep and you're like, it's a real didn't he situation.
Mm. Have you seen The Jinx?
Oh my God. I watched The Jinx in its entirety, all six episodes on a flight home from New York. I was by myself.
Oh yeah, yeah.
I was on like whatever I was flying United or something and they had like the HBO
or whatever.
And I'd heard about it and I knew
how. Because it's one of those things that some people have seen and some people haven't because it's on HBO and it's hard to find sometimes.
Yeah. So I didn't want to know anything about it, obviously. Yeah. So then I watched the entirety of it. I could not stop on a plane by myself.
Next episode.
And I was like, if this gets cut off, but before this plane lands, I'm going to Hong Kong. Like, I'm going wherever this plane is going next. I will be on this plane to watch the end. I cannot not see the end of this thing. It was so good.
Fantastic.
I did not sleep, really, that night. Because it's
a lot to take in.
It's a lot to take in. Thankfully, I was exhausted from my trip. So eventually it kicked in, but there was some...
You're riding high in that adrenaline for a while.
There's some bumps in the night.
God, it's good, though. Oh, I suggest if you have
every other
6 hours
crime,
to kill,
yeah, every other watch true crime documentary is trying to be The Jinx.
Yeah. Oh, it's amazing. He's so horrific. He's
such a weirdo.
Is it like
a
Buffalo Bill moment?
No, not that.
But
not,
it's like this moment.
Man who's had a whole life of just being fucking weird and being under the radar. And all of a sudden you're like
you, you if are, you wrote him as a done? Character,
yeah.
If you wrote him as a character in like a screenplay,
be
they'd be like, no.
It'd be unbelievable.
Like, you got to change this. This is too insane. A friend of mine actually who lived in Toronto, she lived in a basement suite in Toronto and came home real drunk one night with a friend and they were making pizza or whatever. And there's like two doors in her to get in. There's like the mudroom door and then like the door that
into
their house.
Suite, yeah.
So usually they're both locked, which they were hammered. And so they didn't lock the outside door. And I don't know if they had locked the inside door, but they are in there at 3 o'clock in the morning.
Making craft dinner.
Yeah, just wasted. And they look over and there is a guy in the mudroom, like had gone through the first door, is in that second door, like just looking into their apartment. And so she freaks out. They like lean over. There's one girl against the door, sort of along that wall, leans up and locks the door. And so they called 911 right away.
Oh my God.
And the guy was like, I know, it's racing too. So she's like, the officer is like, I think there was someone that came by and asked for a description. She's like, have you ever seen The Jinx?
No.
It looks like that guy. I forget what his name is, but I was like, when she told me that story, I was like, oh God. And she like Googled this picture and she's like, he looked kind of like this, like just black eyes. Old dude.
I would have been
so
wielding
scary.
That pizza cutter like
so
nobody's business.
Scary. Oh my God.
Oh my God. I've been fully shitting my pants.
Anyway, she survived.
No
exaggeration. Yeah. Oh yeah. 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 Yeah.
Oh yeah.
That goes without saying.
You're not sleeping. You're
actually accurate.
Yeah. Anyway, watch The Jinx if you haven't. Don't look anything up about it if you haven't seen it.
Yes.
Don't Google any of it.
Yeah. We're the same thing. I heard whispers about it on like Twitter and stuff.
Yeah.
And Dave and I are like, we got to fucking watch this now. Like, we can't wait 6 months till they re-air it again on age. Like, we need to do this now before it's ruined for us.
Oh, my God, it's so good.
Anyway. I did not watch anything like that when I was alone on the island with
no!
my children.
Oh my God. Of course not.
I did not watch any of that. I did watch Coco, which is on Craigslist. Netflix. I've had two sips of cider. And that movie is one of the best Disney movies in a while.
Really?
Yeah. It was so good. And I absolutely cried. I was prepared to not cry.
Fully cried.
Because I watched a bunch of other stuff that made people cry. And I was like, oh, okay, yeah, this is emotional, but I'm not going to fucking cry about it. Oh my God. Weeping. Weeping. And just in my mind going, they just love each other so much. And now he's dead. So great.
It's on the list.
And beautiful and entertaining and exciting and all these things.
Well, speaking of movies, I just watched Arrival. I'd never seen Arrival.
So good,
and
right?
I was like, aliens
Me
movie?
Too.
I don't know. And it is so much bigger than an alien movie.
I put
my
it off
God,
for
it's
so long.
Good.
Being like, and I love alien movies.
Yeah, I'm
I
surprised.
I love that shit. And I just, it was like, it came out and I'm like, I heard good things. And I was like, yeah, okay, whatever. I'll watch it whenever. And then whatever, 5 years later.
Yeah.
And it's been on Netflix for a while now, too. And then I watched it maybe like 6 months ago.
Chris watched it a couple of weeks.
So
or like
great.
Maybe a week
All
and a bit
the performances,
ago.
The effects,
the story itself. Like, we know nothing.
Very good.
Mm. Oh, it's
very
so good.
Worth your time.
It's so
It would not necessarily good. Be a movie that you would say, oh, man, I got to watch that.
Yeah.
Well, Chris watched
but
it.
But I watched it on a whim.
Actually, the last time we recorded a podcast, Chris watched it.
He stayed home and did it.
He stayed home and watched it. And I was like, oh, okay, like, oh, I would have watched that with you, but all right.
We do That's way to ruin it.
And he's like, I will watch it again 100%, no problem. I was like, okay. So then a couple of days later.
So we're watching it again.
We watched it again. And at one point I was like on the couch and he must have had a weird angle of me and because I wasn't moving or anything. Sure. And he's like, did you fall asleep? And I look over and my eyes were like so wide. And I'm like, no, I'm like, I'm completely enveloped in this movie. Like, no,
Stop
I'm not
talking
asleep.
To me. Yeah. So I'm going to have to rewind the last 10 seconds because you're talking over it.
And he was
Is
like,
Is that kind of movie you can't miss a minute type deal?
No,
not necessarily, but it's very like compelling.
It's incredibly well done.
Yeah.
Is it Amy Adams?
Yeah.
Yes.
And Jeremy Renner. Lawrence Fishburne?
I don't know what it is about those two together. It just,
another
guy. What's
From
his name?
Last King of Scotland, whatever
yes.
his name is.
Mm.
Forest Whitaker.
Forest Whitaker, that's the name.
It's so good. So and the good. Way, you, like, it just throws you, your concept of everything is, like, thrown out the window. It's
oh, is
so
it, is
well
it like,
done.
Is it dystopian?
No, I don't want to say
too
much.
We don't want to give too much away.
Shit. Okay.
It's really good. Just watch it. It's not, like, a typical... I was like, do you get to see the aliens? Because, like, I don't know.
It's better like, if you don't see the aliens.
And Chris is like, just watch it. Just watch
Shut
it.
The fuck up.
And he got a lot
Stop
out of it watching it the second time,
oh,
too.
Oh, sure.
Like, anyway, it's really good. It's definitely a good rainy day. Watch it at night when it's, you know, dark. And because it's not spooky, but it's like, you might cry.
Okay.
It's really good. Yeah. I highly, highly enjoyed it.
I've been watching a lot of costume dramas.
Oh, yeah.
Getting back on that. Like, I watched Elizabeth for the first time.
Oh, yes.
Oh, yes.
With
yeah.
Kate Blanchett.
So good, right?
The costumes.
Oh, my God.
The taffeta. The damask.
Oh, the pearls.
The ermine.
Oh, God.
The glamour. And Joseph Fiennes. Oh, God.
I love the fucking French guy, Vincent Cassel. I love him.
Oh, yeah.
When they're in the boats and, like, the fake battle on the little lake.
Yeah.
Like, smoothing each other and, like, anyway, it's so great.
Oh, God.
She's outstanding.
And
she's amazing. Powerhouse.
Yes.
What did I watch with her in it recently? I was like, fuck, man, you're great. Thor Ragnarok. Oh, my
really?
God, that movie's great. It
really?
Is so great. It is a good time. It is funny. It is exciting. Performances are great.
This
Fantastic.
Is the Chris Hemsworth situation.
Yes.
I will watch anything.
I was going to say, this may not appeal to you because it's superheroes and a bunch of shit like that. That's not necessarily Katie's cup of tea.
The Thor ones.
Very entertaining.
Are very good. The Thor ones.
They're
an exception. I never in a million years would have thought that they would be the funny ones.
No.
Like all the superhero movies.
Yeah.
But after seeing him, he was so funny in Ghostbusters.
Yeah, he was so good. I forgot about that.
So funny in Ghostbusters. That he did it. And he did a lot of the funny stuff. And then a bunch of other people also did a bunch of funny stuff too. Like Tom Hiddleston, funny.
Yeah.
Charming,
yeah, those
funny.
Ones are funny. Those ones
and
are
a bunch
good.
Of other people. Idris Elba, a little bit funny.
There's this. There was this. There was this cartoon.
That's my costume drama. Was Thor.
Was Thor.
You didn't specify what kind of costume.
or Kate what Blanchett's kind of drama?
Kate Blanchett's costume in that Thor movie looks a lot like this character.
It's like painted on.
Yeah, this character from TV show called Reboot from my
oh
day.
Oh my God, yes.
Do you remember Reboot?
They're rebooting Reboot.
Shut your mouth.
Yes, I saw a commercial for it today on YTV.
YTV's
I don't know how I feel about that.
Oh my God.
Are they?
It looks totally different and
It was like the OG digital animation.
It was so shitty.
Yeah, it was.
They're like, oh, a virus is coming in. And it was just like, oh, I loved it. But I loved it, but like,
I think we were that much older than you when it came out that I was like, oh my God, this is
lame. So yeah, I was definitely part of their target market.
But you were like 10 years younger and you were like, oh my God, this
And there was like all of like the fierce femmes in that show that like totally dominated all the time. And like there was the kid who was like supposed to be the hero, but he always fucked shit up and the women had to come and save the day. And then there was the main villain was also a woman and fucking loved her. She was great. And her costume looks a lot like Cate Blanchett's costume in the Thor movie.
It's very well done. So you watched Elizabeth. Have you seen Elizabeth 2?
I watched Elizabeth 2 on the plane.
It's pretty great.
I haven't seen that.
That one, the costumes are like
excellent.
Oh, it's like they put a brick on the accelerator and just let that puppy go flying because
Thelma
it's
Louise
just
style. Just like
literally woo. Like
woo. Oh, I just watched Thelma Louise. Yes.
Is this the movie episode?
I was gonna say, is this movie time? That's fun.
This is our Kiki for today.
Yes. Apparently this is how we're talking.
I mean, I'm tired of talking about my boring ass life where I work and work and work and work and then I sleep.
You'll have to talk about that in 5 minutes.
Yeah, we're getting in 5 minutes and then we're like to give it
But right now, and then I started watching Sense and Sensibility. I love a Jane Austen moment. I love the
who's in everything. That one?
Oh, it's Emma Thompson, Kate Winslet, Alan
Emma Thompson
Rickman,
and Kate Winslet are sisters, and Kate Winslet is the younger sister.
Yes,
I get that one. And
Pride and Prejudice.
Pride and Prejudice all mixed up all the time.
I don't give two shits
because I don't
about
fucking
Jane
care.
Oh, I love the reservedness of it, and everyone is so tortured.
So
I love
so
it.
So boring.
I love it so much.
Oh.
It's just like,
what aren't they saying?
Ooh. That's what I love. Oh, that's what I love.
God. Just say it. We gotta all just write each other a letter and go, man.
Oh my God, I love it. My emotionally repressed Virgo-ness just like eats that shit up, man.
I had to take for my English degree, I had to read some. I avoided Jane Austen, but that whole sort of epistolary letter writing framework as an author.
Oh, the books are fucking tragic, but the film adaptations, you can really sink your teeth into the nuance of it all. You know?
I don't know.
And then the costumes are so good.
I could watch Thor again. Fucking
Give me Thelma Louise.
But I love
it. Someone takes his shirt off for a little bit in the middle. It's great.
Oh my God, but excuse me, Colin Firth coming out of the fucking pond. Excuse me.
Oh boy.
Colin Firth.
Young Colin Firth. This is like 80s Colin Firth.
Too British.
He's never floated my boat.
Give me an Aussie surfer over a British.
Not with you on that one.
I'm just saying Chris Hemsworth.
Oh, sure.
He's Australian. He's a dreamboat.
I've never.
Oh, what else?
Anyway, I've never been a Firth head.
No.
A Firthy?
He's too much like my dad. Like, he's too much of a dad kind of a, you know? He's like, you're.
Yeah, and Bridget Jones, I'm like, why are you fighting over this?
Why, this guy? He's a fucking turd.
My dad is more dazed and
fucking
confused.
Wet turd, what are you doing?
Than Colin Firth.
That is definitely my dad.
That's way, yeah.
I maintain my mother says that she can never watch Dazed and Confused because it's like a documentary.
It's too real.
She can't watch it. Because that is her growing up in Southern Ontario.
Oh my God, I love it.
Climbing the water tower.
Out in a field.
Missy Gale.
Getting a keg. Going to pool hall.
I can see that. I did just, speaking of movie time, we'll wrap this up real quick, but I thought of you. Because I just watched Blade Runner, the original Blade Runner, had never seen.
It's so good.
It's
so great.
I'm going to go ahead and disagree with you.
I know. It is a very divisive movie, and I absolutely understand people who don't like it.
The costumes.
I get it.
Were spectacular. The costumes were, in my opinion, the best part of the movie.
They're outstanding. The fucking clear raincoat that she runs in with the fucking snake.
I was on board until the.
Rachel's whole deal.
Hi.
What?
Fantastic.
What?
No.
Her outfit, though, was awesome.
She's amazing. Yeah, her outfit is amazing. But her, like, as a character and that whole, like,
interaction,
it's not a love scene, but
them,
it's, like,
yeah,
this,
it's
like,
weird.
Romantic. It's, there's no consent. I was like, what the fuck? This shit would never fly now because it's, there's no, she just, like, gets thrown against a wall and he tells her to kiss
it.
And she does,
yep.
like, I was like, no, you lost me. You had me up. If this whole part of the movie was removed,
you could argue,
this would be a stronger film.
You could argue and present, you know, that she's not a human, so does she need consent?
Disagree.
That's the whole thing.
Of course she needs consent.
But that's the whole conceit of the movie. No,
oh, is it?
I'm
is
very,
it?
Like, intellectual about this movie, too.
I also have never read the book, so I'm assuming there's more to the book.
I wrote papers about it in university. What? I, like, lime deep in the Blade Runner.
I'm sure there's more in the book than what was in the film.
The book is very different.
Very different.
Very, very different. There's whole other storylines and whole other parts of it that they don't even touch in the movie.
Yeah.
The movie is a very focused part of the story and the culture and the ideas behind it. But anyway.
But he comes back and he's like, do you love me? And she's like, yeah, and they love each other or something.
It's weird.
You're a fucking robot. What are you talking about? Yeah. Like, you're... No.
But is he a robot too? I don't know. In some cuts, he is. In some cuts, he isn't. Depending on which cut you saw. What? That's also part of it. In one of the cuts, you can see the reflection in his eyes. Like you see on all the other replicants, they have like a little golden orb in his eyes. One of the cuts he does and one of the cuts he doesn't, because they wanted to leave you hanging on, is he a replicant? You don't know.
Do you ever find out?
Not definitively. I think Harrison Ford has come out. Oh, now I don't even remember. He does think that he's a replicant. He does think. The hard drive on my computer is Nexus 6, which is the model of replicant that escapes. And it's like Roy Batty comes back and I'm in like way deep.
I knew you would have some thoughts about this.
My question
is... The costumes were great. That was like, you had me, you lost me with
It is
Rachel.
One of the most visually influential movies
of our
generation.
I think that's
every. There's so many other movies that have taken from that movie. And it took from so many other places too. Mm-hmm. Anyway, maybe I need to start a Blade Runner podcast.
Oh, yeah.
Yep. And you can be my first guest, and I'll convince you to like Blade Runner. Not going
to
happen.
I'd have to read the book first, and you're probably not going to get me to read that book.
It's not that long. It's actually quite short, but...
Yeah, it's just not my thing.
I wrote a paper in university where I compared that to like a 17th century German poet.
That's what you
it's
do in
very
university.
Very academic.
Uh-huh.
I was going to ask.
When you're in deep in like the high 300, 400 level literature classes, man, you're just.
You really just
you're just
get
rifling
in there.
Through shit.
And you have to find something that you're interested in. All the other ideas, I was like, I don't fucking give a shit about any of these people.
You could have. I'm sure this comparison has been made, but the creation story about how, like in Catholicism, there's this idea that women, where it was created from man, so therefore they're man's property, is that a whole kind of idea that with like a robot or something like that, if a man creates a robot and she's a woman, is that considered his property?
Yeah. Dude, you can pigeonhole the fucking creation story and Christ figure into every piece of literature that you've ever read in any university course and get a C anyways.
Yeah. You don't have too many typos and it meets the word count.
I mean, you're probably doing it right.
Be fine. You'll be good. Yeah.
It probably won't be a very compelling argument.
Is that too base of a hypothesis?
Well, your professor is going to be like, do better next time, and you'll get a C.
So file that under.
Any university English majors that are listening, you can always find a Christ figure.
Yeah,
Christ figure is always going
to
be.
You don't even need to be Western.
No.
It can be from any culture.
It can be anywhere.
Yeah, you can make that stick somehow.
Oh, God, religion.
Oh, well. On that note, we can shift gears. It's talking about Evan.
Yeah.
We're not catching up with you because the whole episode of this is catching up with you.
Yes.
Yes.
In a very exciting way.
And like you texted us, you're like, I need to record an episode now before I forget it all.
Right.
Before
so
all that
many
space in my brain gets filled up with other things.
So many things happen. Well, this is in the time warp.
Vortex, whatever. It is the 10th of July? June 10th, right now we're recording this.
June 10th. I'm currently on vacation. But I just participated in the inaugural Indigenous Fashion Week Toronto.
Very exciting.
It was a very expansive and community-building experience. It was wonderful. That's just like the Cliff Notes version.
Sure.
Or like the
elevator
that's the
pitch
soundbite version of the experience. But yeah, like I flew there and there was huge reception at the governor general's or the lieutenant governor's residence in Toronto.
Oh, really? I didn't know that's where that was.
So I was staying with my friend Megan Potts. Thank you very much, Megan, for hosting me. And we were like, okay, like if I'm going to this thing, like I'm bringing a friend. Second of all, I'm going to be very native and be very queer because they have the unmitigated gall to invite my decolonial ass to a function like this.
At the Queen's house.
In a place called Queen's Park.
Yeah.
At literally the Queen's representative of Canada.
The Queen's representative for the government of Ontario.
Yeah.
You're gonna show up.
I'm going to show up. And I showed up and I showed out and we were 10 minutes late. And the whole event.
Perfect.
And the whole event was we showed up 10 minutes after the event was finished. you put two like Métis queers together in a room and put on some music and get out the makeup brushes.
Two
and then
later.
Things are going to take,
yeah.
gonna take a minute,
while.
You know? So we.
Especially when you're going to a fashion event.
I mean, oh, yeah.
Come on.
Yeah. Megan was like, okay, is this going to be like a cab stand sit type deal? Because I want to wear heels. And I was like, yes, we are. This is definitely going to be a stand, not dance, not walk too far mm-hmm. type deal. So we got all together. I wore a huge skirt and one of my embroidered tops and a clutch. Did a whole beat. We get into an Uber, taxi, whatever the hell it was we got into. I can't remember. And we get there and like I run into some folks from Vancouver, Jolene Mitten and Tiffany Craik. These amazing folks who ran the backstage and Tiffany did the programming for the week. So thank you, Tiffany. And they were like, oh, it's over. And I was like, oh, I'm too decolonial. They didn't want me in there. So me and Megan were there and like, it's this beautiful, huge monument of colonialism and with all of this like stone gilded work and like this huge staircase. And I was like, okay, if I'm wearing this fucking skirt and there's
You're
a staircase, I need some pictures.
Yeah.
So we took a picture and it was been on the brand Instagram since. So I'm sure. If you follow my brand Instagram, you saw it.
It's on there somewhere. Yeah. I'll have to check it out. Although I'm sure I've seen it. I'm sure I liked it.
So from there, we just like went to dinner and the next day was the fashion show. So I got there super early. I was like the first person there, picked out my spot, set up everything, did fittings, which was a fucking whirlwind. We had to do fittings the morning of the show, which is always...
That's always...
Which is never something I've ever done before.
Hectic.
Yeah, and I've never done a show outside of Vancouver before, like where I couldn't just like hop on the train and run back to the studio.
Right, of course.
Things
oh, sure,
were like a little
to.
Dicey or yeah. we forgot something or whatever.
And you don't have the same people
no.
to call necessarily that
I
you
didn't have
hear.
Anyone
yeah.
except for me. And then my friend Tobin came in and helped me out and was a huge help. Tobin's a fashion girl too, so.
She knows the deal.
Yeah, so... We did the damn thing. The models were amazing. Like
every
the casting was amazing.
You knew too, so that was nice.
Yeah, I knew a couple of the models. So
the pictures coming out looked amazing.
Oh yeah,
yeah,
yeah.
The
whole
girls all looked.
Yeah, it all went like. Other than during the show, like the chain, all the designers shared models through the whole night, so we didn't get to like dress our lineup and just wait for the show.
Right.
Oh sure, because models
was,
were always
yeah.
in being. On the runway.
They were in someone else's clothes, like right up until my show started. Yeah. Or on the runway in someone else's clothes. So I was the fourth out of five designers, so I had to wait literally like
till
the last second to dress everyone.
Oof.
Which was not fun because my clothes...
It's not ideal. It takes some time to get into.
My clothes, like all of the looks are very layered, so it's like top, jacket, like...
Boots, pants, whatever.
Yeah, yeah. Hat, bag, belts, all of this other stuff. So like there was a lot of like logistics to do and like making sure, okay, this girl is at the end of this designer. So we should put her in the middle to the end of our show, but I want her to be in this outfit. So it's like,
gotta rejig
the lineup and like the whole show needs to have a flow and a progression and like all of that stuff. It's like, it's like choreography. You have to choreograph the show and like make sure things come out in an order that makes sense.
Right, and that certain things have to be worn by certain girls for fit reasons
for
or
fit,
for shoes
yeah.
or like sometimes you don't have time to take shoes off.
Sometimes
so you have
models
to
don't aren't that experienced and they can't wear something that has a train.
Yeah,
or
yeah.
that's floor length. Or they're just not comfortable, or like Yeah, it's just,
I mean, whatever. There's like a thousand.
Yeah,
like a thousand, yeah, little tiny variables. Parts.
Yeah. Yeah, like just like something that I try to do that not a lot of designers kind of think about is making sure that the models are consenting to wear what you're putting them in, because my clothes can sit on the, or can toe the line for what some conservative folks would consider to be decent.
Sure. Some of them are more provocative
than
others.
They're more provocative than others. And
with gender fluid things happening too.
And with gender fluidness,
too,
right? And I want to make sure that people feel like
are okay with
they're
that.
Being represented to the way that they want to be represented, and that we're not...
Everyone's
comfortable in what they're wearing, and that we're not going to put someone in something that's going to give them any dysphoria.
Yeah, there's no exploitation.
There's no, people aren't being exploited, and that people are consenting to what they're wearing, and we're thinking
about
all of that
as well. And are part of the
show
and not just a... prop piece. Yeah.
Yeah. And people, and that they like what they're wearing and they're enjoying it. Like, I can tell when I put something on a model and like it's just not vibing.
Yeah.
You know, and like they feel like a hanger and like they're not connecting to the work. And people are going to see that on the runway.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like you don't want people who could potentially be buying your clothes to be see someone uncomfortable in your clothes. That's just not like a good
energy.
Sure.
And you're such an
assess.
Emotional designer too, right?
Oh, yeah.
Where like there's some people who just make pretty things and they can be quite detached from it. That is not your process.
No.
So to have your model be part of that process, I can imagine, is very fulfilling.
Yeah, and it makes sense, because like my clothes don't like exist in a vacuum. Like they're supposed to be out in the world and lived in and have a life. And if it's not on someone who's into it, then that's just gonna completely go against the whole vibe of the brand and the show and the whole kit and caboodle.
Yeah.
So. We did all the fittings and all the crazy, and you can imagine with like, I think there were 5 dressers total backstage, which was definitely not enough. We like every model needed to have like
their own
2 dressers,
two,
and there were like probably 20 something models.
Oh boy.
So the designers ended up having to do most of the changes, and I was there and tucked my train into my belt and just like
got to work.
Went to work. And one of like the there's a couple of corsets in the show. And we're like, okay, like this girl is going to need to go from a corset to this in a very small amount of time. And we're like, we're not going to like, so we had to cut them out of the corsets. Like we just cut the laces on the corset, which was like, it felt like, it was very fashion. It was very like I don't know.
On to the next.
Yeah, like someone was there with the snips and it was like, and like the corset just like fell down and like.
Moving on. And you stepped out of it and you on to the next thing.
Very cinematic.
Very cinematic. Yeah, I wish someone had like. Caught like just that little snippet and then fucked right off because there's no room for you, and also
get
you
out of the way.
Be filming people changing.
that's also true.
Yeah.
Speaking of consent.
Yeah. So this one model changed out from a corset into this bodysuit outfit with a skirt and a hat and a clutch and a belt and this whole thing. And she was wearing pants in the first outfit, so she had to take her shoes off. She had to basically do the whole thing.
Yeah.
So that was the look that we were most scared for.
Worried about, yeah.
So I wasn't there. I was getting another model into another corset because she was in another show, but
she had to go.
The only one who would fit it, who fit this dress properly and who had enough time to get into it. It was just like, it was all of the logistics. It's boring, but like just
it
like
was a lot.
It was a lot. So I'm getting her into this dress and lacing her into it and looking at pictures, like it's completely like not balanced on the sides because it's open on the side seam and open in the back, and like the one side is a bit bigger. It's like maybe an inch bigger, which you can't really tell if you're looking at it. But my crazy Virgo mind, where everything needs to be symmetrical and perfect, really noticed, and it bothered me. I had to get her into that dress, and then while the other girl was changing out of this crazy outfit that we needed to cut her out of and then put her into another outfit, they were zipping up this skirt, and this skirt has like an exposed zipper on the center front of it, and the zipper got caught in the mesh of the bodysuit.
Oh, no.
And instead of pulling back down, this dresser just yanked on the zipper and pulled the tab right off the zipper.
Oh no.
Like pulled the,
the pull.
The pull.
Oh,
yeah. So it was just like a moment where like my blood ran cold and I was just like,
all the time
calm
stops.
Down, Evan, do not lose your shit. Do not lose your shit on this dresser. They it's not their fault. It's
they
a
know
fucking
not
last
what
package.
They
know not what they do. They're not experienced. Like you've been in the game for so long. Like you know what the, And then the model was like, oh my God, what did you do? The model is like...
The model knows something's
happening. Like, I mean, like models were going in and out of this skirt all fucking day by themselves, you know? Like,
it's
not like the skirt was difficult to get the problem, out of.
Yeah. Oh, well.
So that whole outfit didn't go out.
Oh,
it was like
no.
four pieces. It was like a bodysuit, a hat, a clutch, a belt, and the new skirt that I spent 2 days making.
Oh, no.
That one was like really, if it was an old piece that they,
sure,
that,
they'd already I would have been like, oh
yeah, and people have already seen and it's already on the website, but like, yeah, this new piece didn't get its day in the sun, unfortunately.
Yeah. That's a real bummer.
That was a real bummer. But that was really the only mishap that day. But everything else was fabulous. And all like, just like being in that environment with all those designers was amazing. And the hair and makeup team, everyone was native, and the models were all native, and the crew was all native.
Audience full of native people.
Audience full of native folk. And it was just like, it was a very similar energy than that was in Vancouver, for sure. And it was really nice to be there. And then the rest of the week was fucking crazy. It was like...
Well, there was like panels and events panels and showcases and
other people's shows.
And there was an exhibit, and like, yeah, it was like a full-on...
What kind of event. Venue was it?
It was at Waterfront Center. Harborfront Center.
Okay.
It's a very interesting place. It's like an artist facility. So there's a huge theater, and there's like a smaller theater where they do lectures. And then there's the venue that I showed in, which is basically like a big black box type thing.
Sure. Multi-purpose
space. Multi-purpose space with like the full AV lights situation set up. And then there's all of these different studios where they do dyeing, pottery, jewelry making,
cool,
metalwork, carpentry, like, and it's all like open to the public. You can just like walk by and see what everyone's making.
That's cool.
Yeah, it's kind of like a fishbowl situation. Like you're kind of like surrounded by glass, so people can walk by outside and see into the studios, and people can like go inside the building and kind of see what everyone's doing and making. And then there's a gallery in there and like a couple of restaurants, and it was a beautiful space. And
that's great.
It opens out onto this huge plaza. Like Harborfront Center is like a gigantic plaza right along the lake in downtown Toronto.
Very cool.
Yeah, and it was a beautiful space.
So what other like events did you get to go see or participate in? Because it must have been
I went to all of the panels except for one of them because I desperately needed to sleep.
And
then I went to all the shows were all amazing. Every night had its own vibe, which was really interesting. Like Tiffany did an amazing job with the programming, and the whole like there was four nights of shows, and every night was the programming was inspired by a different phase of the moon. So instead of like the fashion seasons,
It was
dictated by like the phases of the moon. So the new moon was my first night, and it was all emerging or new designers. And then, I mean, I've been in the game for a minute, so it's like this is how much work it takes to be considered an emerging designer.
Well, that's the thing. It's like actors that are like all of a sudden like, the new upcoming thing, and like, bitch, I've been auditioning for 15 years.
Yeah. You're just hearing about me now.
Yeah,
so my first night was the first night was new moon, and then it went into berry moon, which was all modern regalia.
Okay. Oh, cool.
So very traditional like stuff. Sure.
It's like it was regalia, traditional and modern. So it was like reinterpreting regalia. For,
and what's regalia for people who don't?
Regalia is like the traditional garments that different nations will wear for
not
ceremony.
A costume.
Not costume.
Not
notice
costume.
I'm not saying costume.
It is regalia.
Regalia or just traditional garments that you wear for ceremony or performance, whether it be powwow or jingle dress dancing, fancy dancing, fan dancers.
The big headdresses.
Like shawl dancers. Oh my God, shawl dancing is my favorite. So it's like hypnotizing
to
watch.
It's so cool.
Yeah.
I went to a show last year at the Children's Festival here in Vancouver, and there was jingle dress dancers, two shawl dancers, and I'm totally spacing on what it was now, but like
it was probably just fancy.
It's so that's what it was, fancy. Yeah. It is so subtle and so beautiful. Some of the things, like some of the movements, are so tiny and deliberate and beautiful.
And they use every single muscle in your body.
Every part of their body. And then there's some parts that are real showy and real, you know.
And you go off.
And you go nuts.
Yeah.
And these outfits that they're wearing are.
Oh, yeah. And like, insane. And these things aren't like ordered from this huge company that makes them. Like, they're made mostly in community.
You put an order line on, online.
So there's usually like someone in community who makes everyone's regalia for the powwow circuit for whatever. So, and like, and that night was really telling for a lot of people who had maybe never seen regalia up close or not even in that light, because you look at these pieces and there's like no question that the work that Indigenous people do now and have done and will do in the future is on par with
on a level that is just
with
so
like
high.
any luxury fashion couture, brand or haute couture brand, like it's like mind-boggling to see all these. And I was backstage most of the time because that's kind
where
of
where you are. Sure,
that's where my people were. Like, I knew a lot of the models and the organizers, and if I was like waiting for a show to start, I'd be chilling with these folks, you know, and like just hanging out and like seeing all these people and all of their work up close was amazing. Because usually, like, when someone's performing, when someone's in performance or in ceremony is very private, and people don't have access to those things. But if someone's in performance, whether they're at a powwow or just anywhere, you don't get to see the regalia up close. Mm. You know, like, at least I don't. Like, I don't. Sure. I don't want to like treat these people as like an attraction. You know.
Yeah.
So it was really amazing to see it all up close, and it's mind boggling. Like, the amount of work that goes into just one piece of regalia.
And what was sorry, I didn't mean to interrupt. There's, what is the name of that hip hop band from
Tribe Called Red?
Tribe Called Red. Yeah. They released a video last year, maybe. Couple years ago,
headdress?
With the headdress and with the shawl dancing, and I watched it 15, 20 times.
I've been
in
on
a
some
row.
YouTube like wormholes with hoop dancers.
Yeah, the hoop dancers are crazy,
and they make all the animals and like, oh my, and they're going so fast and they're not barfing them. it is.
They have like
so
25 hoops that they're just maneuvering somehow. Yeah. So cool. It's so amazing. It's like
everything about it is just so meaningful and impactful and impressive and exciting
so
and
beyond our dumb white girl.
Oh man, that's bullshit. Seriously. Well, that's so exciting that it got to be in a fashion show context. That's exciting.
Yeah, it was beautiful.
You don't see it in that, like you say, you don't get to see it in that context ever.
No.
Like, even as a Native person, let alone as an outsider.
Yeah, and I think it really,
that's fascinating.
I think it did a great job of restructuring the way people think about Indigenous regalia, because they made a huge point in saying all of the things that I just said about how it's not a costume and the placement of everything is very important and who makes it, and like, you always make regalia with the person who's going to wear it in mind. It's not made for this mystery
off
customer.
A rack or something,
you know, in fashion, like, each brand has like their target customer, or they create a character that they design
for.
Their
muse or their whatever, their quote girl,
like
that's not how it works.
Like, back in the day when I used to say the Evan Ducharme woman, I don't do that anymore because my character doesn't have a gender. Not my character, my customer doesn't have a gender, the person I make clothes for.
You've evolved.
I've evolved, as most human beings do,
and you should.
Yeah.
But yeah, so these regalias are made for that person to perform a specific thing.
Yeah, and like, and every nation has their own protocol and their own style, and each
That's how the shit gets handed down too, right? Like, that's how you learn how these things are learned and disseminated, and you know, improved upon or changed or made to be exactly the same.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so like, that parallel really was like driven home, like this idea of tradition and quality and
craftsmanship and
is creativity. You can really, there can be parallels drawn between haute couture, where it's tradition.
All those videos we're obsessed about, with the Dior ateliers and stuff that we'll eat up.
The savoir faire videos.
Yeah. I would watch all that stuff.
I just watched a bunch of them yesterday.
And like the bead making and the jingle dresses, like the tin and how they make
that's
all
like the
of
top
those.
Of a
those
can.
All made.
Yeah.
Like,
by hand.
They were made, like, they were pounded tops of a can. That's what jingle dresses were. Like, that blew my mind.
Mm-hmm. And the beads and the beading and embroidery.
The
and
leather. Oh, God, the leather.
It's
beyond. Oh, boy. Anyway. Sidetrack.
The next night was Harvest Moon, and it was a tribute to matriarchs. So it was five Indigenous women who showed
were more established and
were more established. So, so let me just
we just happen
name,
to have the program have right the program. Here, which is a beautiful little what's the word I'm looking for publication.
Yes, yeah, so it was four rather. Tracy Toulouse, Denise Brillen, Delina White, and Dorothy Grant. Dorothy Grant is probably easily the most famous indigenous fashion designer in the world.
Sure, she does Haida.
Haida, correct. Yeah. And
she showed here too, didn't she?
She showed in Vancouver. Yeah, she closed out the whole event, I believe.
Yeah.
But it was just like, yeah, so an intergenerational honoring of our matriarchs, their stories and designs that have been passed through generations. So it like
what
that
a refreshing take.
Ugh. Right?
God, why don't we have more of that in the fresh fashion air. World?
Like, let's honor women and all of their knowledge and all of the things that they give
and
us.
And work and labor and support.
And brilliance.
And management.
And beauty.
Family management. Yeah. And
emotional labor.
Emotional labor. I mean, you name
physical
it.
Labor.
Yeah.
Physical labor. Yeah.
Oh, boy.
That's
great.
We could all learn.
Yeah, take a minute.
From that.
So that's just like a very telling difference between
the
regular
show
fashion
were
world.
One. Yeah,
or
absolutely. Where it's a bunch of fucking white dudes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Like doesn't matter
Tom
how talented or important
Calvin
you think
Klein's.
You are.
Yeah. Just reeking with misogyny. So, and then the final event was Frost Moon, and this is all designers from the north. So there was designers from what is currently known as Northern Canada, Greenland, Alaska. Yeah. So
it's like Inuit.
It was stunning. It was just like it was
probably
like
very different than all the other
fur.
Stuff too.
It was the beautiful fur. Oh,
the
fur. Their language is so beautiful. Like the writing of their language
is fantastic.
The way that their language
I was obsessed with it
sounds,
as a kid. Like just seeing the writing,
it's
like at a children's museum or something, being like, what is that?
It's so pretty.
Yeah.
It's so pretty.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's great because they're often a part of Native culture that people don't think about.
No, because not a lot of people live in the North.
You think about totem poles and teepees.
Yeah.
You know, you don't think about these beautiful people who've been living up there for thousands of years.
Yeah. In what is
surviving, thriving.
Yeah. In what people thought was this barren, desolate land where no life could exist. Excuse me, people have been living and thriving up there for
tens of thousands of years.
And that night was just like otherworldly. I hate to use that word in the context for Native people because it kind of puts us in this like fantastical place. But like, it's something that I the farthest north I've ever been is Churchill. And like that place just looks
polar
like
bears
nowhere
around.
Else in the world. But like, I'd never
it's way
seen
up in
this.
Northern Manitoba.
Yeah, and like the only person I knew from that event was Shosho, and Shosho was an amazing work, and she showed some amazing new pieces that were just like mind blowing. I worship at the altar of Shosho Squiro. But like these furs, man, just like the seal fur, and like, and it boggles my mind. And these folks, like, they do this work themselves. It's not something that they contract out to a furrier.
Mm.
They do it all through indigenous practices and
they know the person who caught it and killed it.
And
if they didn't do it themselves,
and it's completely ethical, like the most ethical for anything
sustainable,
you could ever purchase. And then the models that they casted for that night were mostly models from the north.
Cool.
How thoughtful and important.
So
seems so obvious.
Yeah, so it was like there was this.
A bunch of tall, 5'11" blonde Russians looking ladies.
Nope. Not one, not a single one. So there was this beautiful moment. This queer Native person with they're from the north and they have the face tattoos and they come out in this gorgeous seal jacket and I was just like. And I'm just like, I was like screaming on the inside, screaming in exaltation.
Yeah.
You know, like just like the thought and the power and the
impact,
the impact that has, the international implications.
Yeah.
It's just like.
Those face tattoos are like, there's something about that that is so I don't want to say foreign, but I don't know what the right word is.
It's not foreign. It's not exotic. But it's
there's a word.
Those have that so many bad connotations attached to them. But I know what you mean.
What is the word for like the kind of beauty that my upbringing will never truly be able to appreciate because I've only ever seen it at a distance.
Yeah.
And it's it's awesome. Like it is full of
awe-inspiring.
It's awe.
Like, it makes you full of awe.
Like, this is all in
never
Canada.
Seen this before.
This is in Canada. Is and this is amazing. When I was a kid, we had a book. I think it was the Robert Munsch book. Maybe it wasn't Robert Munsch. Scratch that from the record. I forget who did it. Anyway, it was this book from the north, and it was called The Quillipiluit.
Oh.
And it was about these, this Inuit, this Inuit daughter and her mom or something, and these witches who lived beneath the surface of the ice.
I remember this book.
And it was called The Quillipiluit and A Promise. It was called A Promise is a Promise.
It is a Robert Munsch book, yeah.
It is a Robert Munsch book.
They renamed it a few years later to something in the language.
But it was when I had it. It was called A Promise.
I thought about this.
A Promise is yes.
And it was one of my favorite books when I was a kid. It's so beautiful.
If you just look at the pictures,
and they
for
all
hours.
Had these. I had a little. I had a little puppet, a little Inuit girl puppet. When I got it, it was an
yes.
Eskimo
oh my god!
Puppet.
I'm googling the cover. Yeah.
Right.
Absolutely.
And they had those coats with the fur, and I had this little
big boots.
Inuit puppet with like the fur fingers and a fur trim around her hood, and I was obsessed. Like it was so beautiful. It could have been East Africa. It could have been Papua New Guinea, but it's part of my own country. And it felt so distant. Mm-hmm. And I couldn't get enough of it. And like the word Quillipiluit, that was the name of the daughter or something. I forget what the story was, but it was like the coolest word I had ever heard in my life. It was so beautiful.
Your little kid brain was like, what is that?
Yeah. Yes. It was so cool. Like, teach your kids stuff. Like, go beyond Walmart, you know, go beyond Disney. There's so much more cool culture that you can learn about that stuff. It was so good.
I totally forgot about that.
You remember it though, yes?
I distinctly remember those witches. And those witches fly around in my brain.
There's the skulls. The drawings were so weird and awesome.
We'll put a link on the website for her because it's really, really good.
I want to have a discussion about that. I of course, someone from the north would have a very different opinion.
The guy who did the
illustrations,
I think, is from the north.
I think he is from, yeah.
The guy who did the illustrations is from the north?
Yes, I believe so.
An indigenous person from the north?
I think it was like a team effort. It wasn't just Robert Munsch. It was a team effort, I think.
When Alishua disobeys her parents and goes fishing in the sea ice, she has to use her wits to escape and to further trick the Quillipiluit.
Quillipiluit. They were those sea witches, right?
And she promises to bring her brothers and sisters back to them.
Quillipiluit. Oh, so cool. When I was in, I went to this trade show with a former job. There's this big show in Toronto called the One of a Kind Show. And the last year that I went to it, they had a group of designers from up north. I forget where. Iqaluit, maybe? I can't remember. I don't want to say it incorrectly because I can't remember exactly. It was a few years ago. But they had authentic seal skin gloves and garments and hats and pants and the most amazing traditional coats, those like pull-on coats that open from the top. They don't open from the front. Yeah. And so they like pull them down like kind of like a kid's snowsuit. You know when you have a kid's in a snowsuit and you got to like wash your hands. So instead of taking the snowsuit off, you just unzip it and just leave it around their waist.
Around your waist, yeah.
That's sort of how they're designed so that they don't open from the front, but they open sort of from the side kind of.
Oh, sure. So it's sort of easier to get in and out of if they need to. Mm-hmm.
And you can carry kids around in their
whatever their life requires of them,
I'd seen photos of things that were like that, but I'd never seen one up front. And I was like, I just hung out there for a while, and I was like, tell me everything about these garments. They were so cool.
Oh, wow.
It was their first time showing at any kind of a big event and showcase and stuff like that. So they were like, you know, kind of new about. Mm-hmm. How
a little
to
reserved,
talk about
perhaps?
It? Yes, yeah. Definitely.
Sure.
So I didn't want to
didn't know their audience so well, necessarily.
Well, it's not. I mean, I just didn't want to be that like loudmouth white girl. Like, this is neat. Tell me about it. Because like, God, that's annoying. And I did not.
You don't want to be
that
girl.
That's annoying when they do that to me and I'm a dumb white girl. So like, I get annoyed with that. I can't imagine how invasive it could feel if this was like your life and your culture that you're representing, you know, representing and showing. And, yeah. Anyway, they were so fucking beautiful. The fur was amazing. They had dyed furs. They had classic furs. Like the coats were unbelievable. They were like $4,000, mm-hmm. I think. Oh, they were amazing. Worth every penny. I'm sure you'd never have to wear another coat in your whole life. Yeah. They were amazing.
And no one would ever have that jacket.
No, yeah.
Mm-hmm. They're one of a kind pieces that are irreplaceable. So
yeah. The North is like...
The North is calling me.
Yeah.
I Gigi Forget, like one of my former design assistants lives in the North. She lives in Yellowknife and has been bugging me to go to the North for a very long time. And also the dance company I'm with, I met like some of the other designers, some of the other dancers in the company, like just a couple of us want to do a tour in the North and bring the Métis culture up North and
learn about their
stuff.
And
just like do some sort of cultural exchange type deal. And
that'd be amazing.
Like, that would be amazing. And I can just like, I can feel it. Just like,
something's brewing.
Yeah, the North is calling. So hopefully I'll be up there quite soon.
That'd be amazing.
Yeah. We're trying to go up. Keep us posted on that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, Chris and I are trying to go up. I don't know how far north we'll make it, but we want to go up in August and do like a big road trip.
Sweet.
I don't know. We need a car first, so.
Yeah, you gotta.
Hopefully by the time you're listening to this,
continues, yes.
Hopefully we'll have one. Listeners.
Figure something out.
Dear listeners, hopefully this isn't a problem anymore.
Oh, boy.
It is right now.
So I'm just trying to like think back to like my other episodes we've done, and we've talked a lot about the design process, but this time around I had a bit of a design process, but the whole process of getting ready for the show was very different, and it's not something that I really liked that much.
Oh, really?
Okay.
No. It wasn't.
It's good that you did it, I guess, but you know, not to do it again.
Yeah.
Well, yeah, it's an amazing opportunity that it would be foolish to not.
Yeah.
And do once
capitalize
least.
On.
Yeah. Yeah. And once I got there, I really wish I would have had a new collection to show.
Mm.
Just because, and I'm really trying to combat this idea that my clothes are not exciting or valid after they've been shown and put out into the world, because that just like really drives this system of obsolescence in fashion, and like that's just
consumerism,
so against
and
consumerism and capitalism,
yeah.
Whatever.
It's just, a bad combination.
It's against my indigenous code of ethics.
Yeah.
And it's also just not sustainable for my business. We don't operate in a large capacity, and it's
you just work yourself
incredibly taxing
into the ground. Yeah.
But like this time around, I really wanted to inject a different energy into the collection. These first two collections with Origin and then with Atavism, they were very, I would say, they had a very angry energy in them, because I was angry.
Sure, that was what you were working with.
Yeah, and because the work is so personal, so much more personal than anything else I've ever done, that really got into it. And I think now that I have some distance between the events of what transpired in my career before Origin and after Origin, I kind of understand now why people weren't as receptive to Origin as they were before, because the narrative of my brand completely changed.
Mm.
You know, like my brand was very consumable, and it was designed in a way to really latch on to what was happening at that time in fashion, and it was very fashion driven, and it fit into the fashion narrative and like what fashion was at that time. You know, like this whole idea of gender neutrality and gender bending was something that I explored in my work when that was kind of just taking off.
Sure.
In the fashion industry.
Of that, yeah.
And like, and I really felt like now that I look back at it, I was designing things to be palatable in a sense. I didn't want to do anything too.
You didn't want to rock the boat.
I didn't want to rock the boat too much.
Sure. You still wanted attention and acknowledgement and
yeah,
sure,
and I mean we still threw models on the runway like with jock straps on and
yeah.
You know, but that narrative was a little, I mean, that narrative isn't new, you know, like, and sure, the idea of a jock strap is very masculine and has a lot of masculine undertones to it. And I think like after Origin and probably definitely after exposing myself to different modes of thought and really thinking critically about my identity and the world
yeah,
and my position,
other people and
like what I want my brand to represent.
Sure.
That all really changed, and I basically didn't give a shit anymore what the mainstream fashion industry thought about
would impose on you, sure, or expect of you.
And after Origin, when the bloggers who had been interested in my work, the clients who were interested in my work, the stylists who were always pulling my clothes, all those people were gone.
Yeah,
I think I talked about it a bit before, but maybe not to the degree that I am going to right now. I anticipated that people were going to not maybe understand it, or they're going to be kind of uncomfortable about the subject matter I was talking about.
Yeah,
you know, and people might take things personally, which a lot of people usually do when Indigenous people speak up. And especially in areas where people don't want fashion designers and they don't want musicians to be speaking up and putting
their
life into their work.
I'm like, being oppressed.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And it's just like,
I'm being marginalized.
Yeah, it's just like
it's a tough rope to walk.
It is.
Yeah.
And yeah, I was just thinking back on those two seasons and I really put it all out there. Like I talked about very personal things from my family. I talked about very personal things about
your heritage,
my upbringing, like all of these things, and that made people really uncomfortable. And like
a bunch of people fell off the face of the earth.
Oh yeah, and oh, they hit the road, Jack, and they did not look back. I mean, a couple of them have come back since the Vogue article, but the Vogue article, it's been really interesting to see that.
Pretty validating.
Yeah,
it's pretty exciting.
Yeah, and it's so incredibly validating because me and all the people who worked so hard to get that, we did it our own way. We didn't kiss anyone's ass to get there. We stuck to our guns and we really did things the hard way. We did not take any handouts.
Yeah, yeah.
And we did not align ourselves with people or things or events that we didn't agree with.
Yeah, absolutely.
And that's not to say that I'm shitting on the people who did do these things, because if you're from Vancouver and you're listening to this, you probably have 100% ideas of what I'm talking about. Yeah. I'm not throwing any of these people under the bus because it is a hard fucking job.
The choices they make,
that's all on them.
Yeah, that's their road to take.
Yeah, and their work and their validity and their talent as a designer is completely removed from how they got to where they are.
Yeah, absolutely.
Like, but that was just not, that was not something I was prepared to do.
Sure.
And it was not
the choices you made.
How we wanted to get to where we needed to be.
Sure. Especially after going through this whole, like having a few seasons where you were compromising some part of yourself along the road.
Oh, 100, yeah, oh yeah.
And then when realizing, you put the most of yourself into it, that's when the validation comes.
And here's the thing.
I mean, it must be so.
This is the thing that rocks me. It's like, I interviewed for the Vogue article with an Indigenous writer, a queer Indigenous writer who is in New York, works for Condé Nast. And there were five other Indigenous designers that were included in the article. Not a single one of our ancestors or anyone in our family would have ever thought that something like that could have happened, even a decade ago.
Sure.
Yeah.
And that is what really hit me that morning when that article came out. Of course, an overwhelming sense of gratitude for all the people who've been there and did things the hard way alongside me and like really stuck by me when even I didn't think that this was ever going to be anything. Of course I didn't. I'm from like the middle of nowhere, like, you know, like people like the imposter syndrome is real and
yes,
it exists.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Just like this. Oh, thank you, Chris Chalaire. If you're listening, I don't know if you listen to the podcast. We did talk about the podcast, but it's like
the gratitude
the whole article was done properly. Like there was not a voyeurism about it. It was done.
It wasn't an exoticism, like, oh, look at this stuff. Isn't it cool? Look at this.
There was no sense that they discovered us.
No.
Yeah.
Which is something that is that makes me very uncomfortable when you're talking about indigenous artists, designers, writers.
Oh, it's the white savior complex. It's look at me. I will shine a light on you. You're welcome.
I will
prop
you up.
Yeah.
I discovered you. And it has this whole idea that's tied back to land and this place being discovered.
And ownership and property and debts. And all this weird, and
all this colonial rhetoric.
Colonialism in a nutshell.
You do not need to.
Colonialism doesn't just exist in government and policy. It exists.
Oh, no. It exists in the minds of
art world,
everyone who grows
film,
up.
Yes, in film. Absolutely. In law. In just the way an indigenous person operates through their life in the workforce. Doesn't matter where you are.
How school. What jobs they're offered. Or
how you're treated based on what your last name is or how you look or what your accent is.
Which skin looks like.
Yeah. I think a lot of the reason why I was so angry in Origin and Atavism was because I got rid of my native accent when I moved to Vancouver. We've known each other for quite some time. It's been almost 10 years. So you probably don't remember the way my voice sounded when I moved here. And it might have something to do with not being home anymore. Because definitely when I taught...
In these very formative 20s, right? Yeah. In these years that are...
When I entered the academy, quote unquote, I wouldn't call where we went to school particularly academic. But I was in a space where...
Post-secondary education in a big city on the other side of the country.
Yeah, that...
With that, nobody...
That had very little frame of reference for where I come from and who I come from and what I am.
Yeah. Which still, by the way, is very colonial-centric.
There's Western
still,
academia?
Oh, for sure.
You
what
don't
do you mean?
Say.
I don't mean academia specifically, but also that, obviously. But there's a part of West Vancouver called the British Properties still.
Yeah.
There's this neighborhood.
You know, there's a lot of
There's a neighborhood in Vancouver called Kitsilano, which is named after the indigenous nation that they needed to exterminate.
Yeah. That they...
To have it named at.
To have a bunch of white people live there.
I went to Stanley Park this afternoon, and there is a big statue of... Mr. Stanley.
Lord Stanley.
And it was like a dedication for the park. And it was like to, you know, for all to use of all backgrounds and ages and
creeds blah, blah.
And for
some good
all
old
use for all time.
To slap over your...
And I was like, oh, that's nice. Seeing as you had to kick the fucking First Nations people out of this land who was here for thousands of years before you decided you wanted to have it for a park for all people except for them.
Yeah.
I was like,
but not you.
For
not
you all
you
to go to your carriage rides on Sunday afternoons.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. It's everywhere.
Yeah, but to get to my fucking point, after I go down a long, winding road of bitching and moaning, but these are things,
gratitude and validation.
Yeah, this show, I really wanted to inject some joy in there because a lot of times Native artists and Native people in general, to get people to care about what you have to say or what you have to do, you have to... put your trauma and your struggle out for the world.
Well, sure. There's the concept too of black trauma in the States too, where that's the only story that white people are hearing.
The only
about
narrative.
Now. The only narrative that they hear is that how hard done by and how horribly oppressed and treated that people of color have been for years. And that's there's more than that.
Just look at the roles that the people of color who had to portray to win an Academy Award.
Yeah.
Slaves.
Maids.
People who were the monster in Monsters Ball, a woman who is being abused by her husband,
victims.
That's the only narrative that people are interested in hearing, and that is prevalent right now in literature.
I'm hoping that it's a step towards the next part of that story, which is what you're trying to do now to expose people outside of your culture to the other parts of your culture that are also there and important and exciting and interesting.
And again, I need to say, I'm not shitting on the people who are doing this work of exposing and telling
important.
The truth because it's extremely
important. Because dumb white girls like us need to learn about this shit. We also need more. We need to move past it. At this moment, it's very overwhelming.
And to get back to that word, it's extremely voyeuristic. It's
absolutely.
Like trauma voyeurism.
Yeah.
Where
yeah.
Native people are expected to validate their work through their trauma. And you can't validate your work through your connection to place or family or heritage,
history,
or
whatever.
Anything. So I just really wanted to inject some joy into
this. Some fun.
Yeah. And the beauty of being Native. And the beauty of all of the things that I've learned. And gratitude. And just having a bit of fucking fun, because like,
because that's you,
because that's also me.
First,
like,
of all, that's you as a person. Yeah. First of all, you're one of the funnest people I've ever met in my whole life. I love you so much. But also, that's your life. That's your grandmother's hilarious. Your mom and your aunts.
Oh my god. I love your family so much. They're hysterical.
That is probably a sliver.
Yeah.
My one experience of meeting them is like a sliver of what that is and what that can be, right?
That, like, and what I really want to do, especially in the next collection, I already have a word for it. I'm not gonna say it now.
There you go. Just keep it. Yeah.
The word might be more than a word. It might be something bigger than that. Which
okay. So,
teasers. Mm-hmm.
But the joy and the tradition and the heritage and the music and dance and laughter and the isms of what it is to be a Métis person inform my work just as much as the struggle and honoring the people who had to go through in unspeakable hardships for me to be featured in an article in Vogue written by a Native person. Like, so many with a bunch of other Native people.
Yeah.
On the cusp.
Who are equally as talented and like important and influential as anybody else.
So this show, I wanted to flip the script. I felt
that's refreshing to hear, because you were super bummed out about fashion for a while.
Yeah.
Very long time.
Yeah.
You were really bummed out about it, and you'd run yourself raw, and you weren't feeling in a good place about it. So that's very exciting to hear that you've come through to the other side.
I feel it the first four collections I did, I really felt like I needed to prove myself to this industry.
A new city, a new career. Mm-hmm. You're young, you know, like,
I'm young. I'm not from wealth.
Yeah.
I didn't grow up in a cosmopolitan area. I have very weird references for everything that I'm interested in.
You got all these marks or whatever.
That I think have been stacked against me, in reality, I just had to not give a shit.
Flip it.
Into it.
Move
and then
perspective.
Two seasons in, we're in Vogue.
Amazing.
That doesn't mean something then. I don't know what does.
You know, it's just like
you said, it finally get into what the meat of it is, and then you get the validation. That must be incredibly...
Even as early as design school, if my graduate collection had been inspired by, my graduate collection was very much inspired by where I come from, but not in because I knew I was playing the game at that.
Well,
I was
for
still
sure.
playing
you're
the
testing
game.
The waters. Yeah. You're, you know, yeah.
And I also just didn't have the language to talk about my work in the way that I do now, in a nuanced way.
Especially when you're going into a group of white people.
Yeah, I wasn't removed from. I was in it. Like, I was from it, and that was the only thing I'd ever known.
That was it.
Yeah.
That was all.
So now that I have some distance and some perspective,
and you're older,
and some appreciation, because at that point, I desperately wanted to be gone from there.
Oh, for sure. You're 18. Get the fuck out of there.
Oh, yeah. I had this idea of wide open spaces and all this shit. And I don't think I would.
You had no context for it, because it was just it. This is what you had.
That was my life.
Yeah.
That was just where I come from. It's what I did. Yeah. And now when I'm in these spaces and I'm talking to all these people, I can really see how lucky I was to grow up where I did with these people doing all these traditional. Even then I didn't see it as traditional. It was just what you did.
It's just what. Yeah.
It's wintertime. It's time to go out on the lake and set your nets and make your nets.
You gotta check the traps. And you gotta pick the berries. You gotta make the whatever.
You gotta pluck the ducks. You gotta make
the
bannock. You gotta go to dance class. You gotta learn your Michif. You gotta hear Mama and everyone talking in Michif. Like, you know, you're getting in trouble when they say all of your names at once. Like, all these isms that, like,
you got to pluck the ducks, I think, is my favorite thing.
You got to pluck the ducks.
You have to.
Tap your arm with the watch.
Yeah.
Like, tap, pluck the ducks.
It's October. Right around Halloween, it was always duck plucking time. Yeah.
Bunch of duck pluckers.
Yeah, and like, that was just my life. So I like, now I can think about it from more gratitude.
And more critical way, like
you
said.
And more critical, yeah. And, yeah.
And from a, an eight, you're, you've you've grown a lot. I mean, it's been, what, 8 years since you moved out here? So that's, age is a gift sometimes.
Yes. Time is your friend.
Yeah, yeah.
You can make it be your friend.
Yeah, definitely.
Make it work for you.
I'm excited to get old. Getting old is a pleasure. It's a gift.
I'm very excited to get old. I have, every year I get older, I'm like, yes, I'm this age.
Yeah, I think
like,
pretty much I'm feeling this.
Ever since I hit 30, I was like, okay, yeah. This is me. This is good. I don't necessarily love it all, right? Because that's life. You're not going to love everything about it.
And being human, you're allowed to.
Secure in it. That's a good word. I'm secure in it. Mm-hmm. I'm knowing, like, we'll figure it out.
Yeah.
We'll make this work.
Yeah.
We'll work it into a move. Figure it out.
It'll be okay.
Yeah. It'll be okay.
Yeah. I just, like, I think about all the people who didn't get to grow old. Growing old is a privilege.
Absolutely.
Absolutely.
Especially when you come from where I come from, you know?
Yeah. Like you said, all the people who have had their hardships.
Yeah. It's...
On many
listen
levels.
To Finding Cleo if you haven't.
Yeah.
Listen to Finding Cleo. Connie Walker, CBC Docs. It's very, very good. Very heartbreaking.
But yeah.
It's a story everyone should hear.
Yeah.
Sidebar. Just a quick little sidebar. We should.
I want to keep talking, like, but.
I know.
I feel like.
I mean, we could, but we should move on.
Yeah.
We can. I'm sure we can find another excuse to talk about this at some point.
Yeah.
I'm sure it's always going to come up.
Yeah.
I'm always working on something new.
Yeah. Reading something.
Why y'all gagging? Something. I give it to you every season.
Yeah. You're a thinker, Evan. You're always thinking about this stuff.
Oh God, yeah.
Well, let's.
And I'm trying to be a listener and a sponge.
Yes.
So I'm very happy to sit here and listen.
Yeah, and learn
about it. And I feel very grateful.
Oh, and this is just one perspective, by the way.
To be in a room with you to talk about you.
Yeah.
Oh, for sure.
Yeah, like, let's avoid pan-Indianism and not think that what I have to say, I speak for all
Native people.
Is the
same as
because I had a very, like I said, I grew up with a lot of cultural privilege that a lot of people didn't get to have.
Mm.
I got to dance and hear my language and see people do all these traditional things. And not a lot of people get to do that for reasons... that are numerous and
documented.
You guys can find out yourself.
Yeah. Look up 60s Scoop.
Yeah.
And let's, with start gratitude, there. Let's...
And just click through the Wikipedia link.
Yeah, I mean, God.
Until you can't read anymore.
Until you start sobbing.
Yeah.
And they can't see anymore.
Yeah.
Well, thank you so much for sharing all of that with us. I've been
very excited.
I'm like avoiding texting you because I'm like, I'll just wait till the podcast.
Yeah.
I just want to hear.
I feel like we didn't even get into everything.
I know. Oh. We didn't, of course.
Yeah,
of course.
But yeah, just like a lot of gratitude for everything. Just gratitude.
Do you think this Fashion Week will happen again?
Yes, they're planning another one.
Thank God. Are they going to do it yearly or twice a year?
I think it's good every year and a half.
Okay.
Yeah.
Because
here's the thing with Native folk, we can't produce a collection in 3 months.
Yeah.
There's like those sealskin jackets, show stuff. You can't do that in 3 months.
You can't churn in those out.
You can't churn out a whole collection in a short amount of time.
Yeah.
It's just not feasible.
It's just not the way it works.
And I know I'm not the right person to say it, but Native time is a real thing.
Oh, it's very much real. Yeah. And it has a lot to do with the fact that time is a colonial construct.
Yeah, exactly.
You know, time was created to squeeze energy and work
oppress
out of people.
And capitalize.
Time doesn't exist for rich people under.
Yes, no kidding.
Under an imperialistic regime.
Oh boy, you guys
everybody
get so into
fashion.
It.
Well, now time is a concept. We've gone over for this. Part
I know
of
we've
our
had too much time, so let's.
But we'll come back in a couple minutes.
Yeah, quick break, and we'll obsess.
We're back.
We were getting all the name drops that Evan didn't want to. Do publicly on the podcast.
Cool. You're trying to be so cool.
I'm trying not to be too much of a dork.
A big dork.
But it's very cool.
But I am, so it I can't help it.
No, it's impossible.
Yeah.
It's okay.
It's all right.
It's okay to fangirl.
Oh God. I fangirled so hard.
Is that your obsession or is there something else you're obsessed about?
No,
yeah.
I'm very much obsessed. I hate this, like, this idea of an obsession for this type thing, but it's just like something that's been on my mind is like just all like the great models that I met at this event and getting to spend like 5 days with them and like be in conversation and just not like and
hang out
and
but
just,
also work
but and hang out and work and like and have these big conversations about indigeneity and fashion and culture, but also just relating to one another as human beings and not like predicating our relationship on being native.
Yeah.
Yeah. The two native people find themselves in a big party and you only talk to each other.
Yeah.
Yeah. But
you have nothing else in common.
Yeah, like it's like especially like there was just like this wonderful energy. I met these wonderful queer kids. I say kids because they're probably like 4 years younger than I am. But I'm an old soul, so I feel older than I actually
am.
Sure.
Yeah.
And my body felt older than I actually am. I was just like this old, like tired body floating around the event like a ghost. But it was really nice to meet other queer native folk. I got to meet this amazing academic named Riley Kutrin. Shout out to Riley. Had great conversations and was a great host one night and brought us out on the town and got to hang out more with Curtis Oland, who I met last summer at Indigenous Fashion Week Vancouver, and really like get into it and like build more, just building relations and like and creating kinship and like something that's predicated.
White people
on
would say networking.
Networking, but it, like I didn't want to network. I wanted to create connections.
You wanted to connect, yes,
and like
which is a very different.
Which is very and like try and go about this weird idea of networking from more of an Indigenous point of view, where you create kin and like you can really have like a reciprocal relationship.
Meaningful.
Between all of our work.
Yeah, you're not just using each other, which is what networking is.
Yeah, literally.
Yeah, pretty much. What can you do for me?
Yeah.
Who can I meet? Who can then do something for me?
And my point of view the whole week was, what can we do together to make things better for people who don't
exist
yet?
To move forward, yes.
You know?
That's exciting.
And then, of course...
It's amazing that all these people were on the same page for that, too.
Maybe, I wouldn't say that. Like, maybe I have very, very grandiose
ideas. But you were able to find people who had a similar...
Mindset.
Perspective,
yeah.
Sure. And I'm sure those are the people who were just there to get their picture taken.
Oh, yeah.
For sure.
And I'm going to get my picture taken.
It's a fashion event. It's a fashion event. Who's going to get dolled up? And there's going to be a bunch of photographers.
Yeah, I don't wear a blue-tiered, thigh-high slit skirt with an off-the-shoulder white top and boots.
Blend into the wallpaper.
And I don't want to blend into the wall.
To not get your picture taken.
Excuse me. I don't do this for nothing.
Yeah.
And then, of course, the models, there was these wonderful kids, Zibby One Rivers and Cleo Kiana, these wonderful queer kids that just like stole my soul and my heart. And it was just like
great
to hang out with all of these great queer Indigenous folk. I just want us all to band together and do beautiful things. You know? That's all I want. Yeah.
That's a pretty good obsession.
You know?
That's pretty awesome.
That's pretty good.
Yeah. That's all.
Yeah, mine's good. Why did you go first?
Yeah, that's just what I wanted. That's what I've been obsessed with.
Nice.
That's really that's
well. You're obsessed with it before you went to Toronto.
Oh yeah,
because that was your goal, right? To meet other or one of your goals. Sure,
one of them.
To connect with other queer Indigenous people and forge those relationships and make those connections. So that's great that you could do it, and that is that inspired you to continue to do so.
Yeah, because even within our own communities, we feel so alone.
Yeah.
And people have different experiences of their queerness in their own community. So it's
sure what that means for them, what it means to the community. Yeah.
That's my...
And learning your differences and learning your similarities.
Exactly. And having very interesting discussions about Indigeneity.
Yes. And queerness.
And queerness, yeah.
Absolutely. Because that's a whole thing, too.
And, yeah.
They keep adding letters to that LGBTQIA. So, hey, man.
Some people...
The conversation is ongoing.
And some people don't subscribe to Western
any
ideas
of that.
Of queerness.
Sure,
at all,
absolutely. Any of those
also
letters.
Very interesting.
Yep.
I could go on forever.
That could be a whole thing too.
I'm going to start a podcast about that.
Yeah. There you go. I don't think I can be on that one.
No, I don't think you can.
No.
I'm trying to like think. I want
cis
everyone to
hetero white lady. Maybe not my scene. Come on, mine. We'll talk about Blade Runner.
Yeah, we'll talk about Blade Runner.
Fine.
I'll talk about fashion.
There you go. Yeah, they're close.
And we can talk about...
People were close.
We can talk about the creation story.
Yeah, totally.
Okay, I'm done.
Oh, beautiful. Stop talking
Much
already.
Much love to these kids and these folks.
Fantastic.
I love it. I just... Oh, gratitude. That's the only word.
It's a good word. We need more of it in this world.
God knows, that's true. Abu Dhabi. What's you?
Sex and City.
Oh, God, please. With all of the
Happy
Sex
20
and
years,
the City,
Sex and the City.
I watched Sex and the City
was
the
it
night before. Yes. Or 20.
20.
20.
I watched it on the night before. I was very excited.
I was 5 years old when Sex and the City came out.
Don't remind me. But it's been really exciting to see all the Sex and the City come out because I didn't love it, but I've seen every single episode, and I've since learned, like, is it a cult way?
Yes,
I'm definitely. I wasn't, like, obsessed with it in my 20s, like a lot of other girls were unhealthily obsessed with it. But it keeps reminding me about the fucking abomination of a second movie.
Oh, boy.
Never saw it. Never will.
You're fine. I envy you, in fact.
If you want to play a drinking game about inappropriateness and
clunky
and
uncomfortable.
There's enough uncomfortable shit in the actual human world.
Yes, well,
let's just talk about the first 30 seconds of that movie where Carrie says Manhattan was populated by a couple of Dutch, a couple of Indians.
Oh boy, that's how it worked out.
And then the whole thing just went, and it all worked out. Exploded in a shit mix of Louboutins and Manolo Blahniks.
We should have a whole episode about Sex and the City. That could be a whole thing.
Yeah.
But anyway, mine's a very kind of a vague thing too. I've been obsessed recently. I've actually been sewing, partially thanks to Evan, which is very exciting because I'm doing a little project for him, helping him offload some of his huge insane workload and trying to take something on.
Thank you
on.
So much. Gratitude.
But like I said, we're moving at the end of the year and I will not have a sewing space in our new house, which I'm trying not to think about because it makes me very sad.
Yeah.
I heavily disagree with this.
But
also I have no...
What are you going to do about it?
Yeah.
What are you going to do about it? I could have some sort of setup in the garage, maybe. Anyway, I've cleaned out my sewing room because it was a fucking disaster. Like, literally piled to, like, waist level with just shit and garbage and just, like, catch-all for a bunch of other things that don't even need to be in there. Finally cleaned it out, organized it, cleared my cutting table, took the covers off my sewing machines, which has been in the little cases for months. My youngest kid is almost 18 months old. It has probably been over, like, close to 2 years since I've actually sewn anything. Anything. Like, I've done repairs and sewn buttons on things, and I made
You made a little sample bag, didn't you? Or no, you made the pattern for the bag. Never mind.
Yeah, see, I didn't even get to do the sewing part.
You made
the pattern
part. the boring grunt work.
It's a fucking square. It's not even some seam allowance. Like, it's not even a cool bag. It's a fucking square.
Notches.
Oh yeah, I got fancy, put notches in it.
Yeah,
but yes, I'm doing this project for Evan, which is very exciting. And trying to, like, I just threw away a bunch of shit. I'm also like a chronic like abandoner, quitter. Like, I'm not gonna finish this. I'm gonna get 99% done. Sheila Campbell, you know what I'm talking about. I'm gonna get 99% done and just not finish it and just forget about it and put it in a shelf. So I committed to a few of those, threw away a bunch of those. Because that's the thing, too. I always feel bad about throwing things away.
Fair.
But then there's just garbage. It is garbage. I'm just not putting it in a garbage bag.
Yes.
And making it leave my house. But I'm not using it. It cannot be used. It is not pretty or useful or have any redeeming qualities at all. I'm just holding on to it because I feel bad about creating garbage. It already exists. I just need it out of my house.
You need to remove it.
It's just categorized differently in my brain, but it is trash. So I got a bunch of that stuff done, which was a great load off. And then found a bunch of things where I'm actually excited about finishing. I made this quilt. I'm calling it my shortcut quilt because I took so many shortcuts. It is not up to anyone's standards. By any quilter standards or even sewing standards, really. A bunch of scraps. I don't know. I was literally like just freewheeling it, trying to figure it out. Just cutting it to whatever. It's not a like standard size of anything. It's just like, I'm just going to cut it till it's square. So we're squared off. It's like a weird rectangle size. But it's finishing it. I'm just at the binding, the edges stage. And even then I did a half of one side and I'm like, there's got to be a faster, aka shittier way of doing it.
Yeah.
What's the shortcut I can use for this?
What's the shortcut I use? So I was thinking about that today. But it's very exciting. I'm going to have this quilt. I'm going to finish this dress for you. So I'm trying to take advantage of this summer, which is crazy because we were having house guests and it's summertime and there's a lot going on. But I haven't had the motivation after the kids go to bed to actually get in that room and do something. I've been so tired and so over it and uninspired and unmotivated that I just go watch TV or if I can do the dishes or whatever. Probably not the dishes.
Read.
Chances are I won't do the dishes. She doesn't love me.
I mean, what?
I'm trying to be better about doing the dishes because I fucking hate the dishes, but I'm trying to be better because Dave always does the dishes. And he also cooks all of the food, so it makes me feel bad.
You just go back to your other motto, which is, I'm not going to finish this.
I mean, yeah. I mean, you did create two human beings.
Well, see, that's the thing. And I keep having to remind myself that this, the way that I'm living my life now, which is completely child-obsessed, it will not be like this forever. It's because my children are exceptionally young and they're very demanding and I am their primary care. Yeah, I am their primary care. I am a stay-at-home mom for all intents and purposes. I work 10 hours a week and many weeks I can't make those 10 hours. I do like 8 and say to my boss, sorry, this is all I can manage this week.
I have to keep these children alive.
Thank God she's super understanding. My coworkers are very accommodating and also very helpful and understanding. We're like, where are those TVS reports? We're at the cover again.
You goddamn it, Abby.
Oh, that stapler disappears. One more
goddamn time.
I've moved to the basement. But so it's very exciting that actually the past week that I've been able to get into the mind space and like listen to podcasts or put music on or something.
That's my favorite.
And like, because I can't listen to podcasts while I pattern draft that involves like math and measuring. Like mm-hmm. I have to just have, and even like music with words even mm-hmm. is like distracting. Like it has to be like something instrumental or like electronic or something. Because I get very distracted. And plus I'm like, it's like 10 o'clock at night. I'm not at like full
capacity
yet. Yeah. So I need all the help I can get. But then when I'm in the sewing and the cutting part, then I can put on a fun podcast. The Malcolm Gladwell podcast is back. I'm very excited about that.
I know. That was my obsession last time. Yeah.
Yes. I'm very excited. Good. Season 2 has started. So I've been doing that. Catching up on my all throwing shades and Jimmy Pardo's that I'm very far behind on. Anyway, so that's exciting too. So it's nice to feel, because I remember going back to design school and getting into it and finally having that, this is what I
need flame to do. Was ignited.
This is what I need to do. Like, it's not like, oh, I like this. Like, I would go to school all day and sew and work and then come home and gladly sew. I've never had that for anything other than like television.
Other than mm-hmm. TV.
But I've never been paid to watch TV and then come home and watch TV.
No, that would be
I took
nice
some film
them.
Classes at university. That was maybe the closest I could get. But I could never make that into like a paid gig.
How do you make that into a paid gig?
You gotta work in television. Mm-hmm. And even then, that's not, you gotta do a bunch of other shit to be able to watch it. Anyway, so I'm very excited. I'm trying to blow through a bunch of projects. I've made myself this like sweater 5 years ago out of like shitty sweatshirt fabric. That's a terrible color. It was supposed to be the like muslin, like the practice one. Mm-hmm. And it just ended up, like, I wear it, it's my robe. I wear it as, and it doesn't even have a closure. It has a safety pin that I just close. No, disgusting, lazy, shabby.
It depends on the state of the safety pin. If it's a cool safety
is it
pin,
a, is it a
no,
kill
it's tank? Like a shitty, gross okay. one that's been like in the bottom of a drawer and like barely closes and is
a little rusted.
And like the hole where the safety
wait,
pin
is, it
is big.
Is it?
I've been putting it in and out and then washing it also with the safety pin in it too.
So it's punk rock, is what you're saying.
Thanks. Yes. Yeah. A good spin on it.
Yeah.
So I've told myself I'm actually going to not get the 50 cents a meter fabric, which is what I've made it out of years ago, and actually make even a couple, even one that's actually a sweater, and then another one I can wear at home because I put pockets on it. It's a great size. Anyway, it's perfect for like a robe or like a lounging sweater, but I would also like it as a regular sweater. So maybe, and again, I think the pattern, it's a Seamwork pattern, which is the Colette online magazine pattern, and you can make it in 2 hours. It's like
perfect.
The simplest thing ever. Maybe a little bit more if you want to put any enclosure on it, which is why mine has a safety pin. I ain't got time for that. But I'm very excited that my brain is actually in that gear right now.
That's nice. That feels good.
Still a little bit lazy about it, but I'm getting there. I'm still cutting corners. I'm getting there. That's this fine. Dress I'm making for Evan's little cousin's, whatever, your friend's wedding mm-hmm. flower girl. I have to do a good job on that because it's a very important
thing.
It's
a moment.
It's a very important thing. It's an important thing for the girl, for the bride, for the family, for the photos, for mm-hmm. you, for I'm representing your brand.
But it's also not for you. You're not making it for you. No. So your standards are already going to be much higher.
Are going to be very much higher.
Isn't that interesting how that happened?
Oh, yeah.
All the stuff I make for myself, I cut every corner imaginable.
I'm like, oh, that's fine.
When I would tell people I was a seamstress, they'd be like, oh, my God, are you wearing something you've made? I'm like, no.
Absolutely fucking not.
I don't have time for that.
Yeah.
Why would I make something for me?
Really, the only time I wear something that I've made is when I go to events.
Yes. And you're going to be photographed in and seen.
Yeah.
And asked about it.
Yeah.
But if it just comes up in conversation, you're like, no, bitch, this is all thrifted. This is H&M. We got these on sale at the
Gap. Right now, literally everything.
These are $19 pants.
I'm wearing American Apparel t-shirt, thrifted pants.
There you go, black tube socks.
Black tube socks.
And a black cap.
And a black cap because my hair looks like shit.
Yeah. We always get the short end of the stick as the designer. Okay. Anyway, I've carried on too long.
That's a good one, though.
It is.
It's nice to have that space.
To have that part of your brain moving back on voluntarily.
Again. The way I see it was like a little
hamster wheel.
Not that's a hamster. The one with the water. What's the one? Like a Jesus.
Like a mill.
Like a mill. Yeah.
Sure.
Oh yeah, yeah. The water wheel.
The water wheel. That's what I saw.
And the more water goes in, the more it moves. And it's like
it's in a river or whatever.
Yeah, cycle, this reciprocal.
Oh, it reminds me of that scene in Outlander when he jumps in the river.
Reciprocal.
I don't know.
Abby, you'll
know. You lost me. I don't know what you're trying to say.
The scene in Outlander when Jamie jumps in the water.
You see his little bum.
There's lots of that one. He has a fat ass. That is not a little bum. He's a fat ass.
It's straight. He's got a man butt. In a good way. Not in like a gross man butt way. And like a best way. Anyway. Yet another tangent. There's a lot of gifts of it.
So many.
Don't know how I know that.
Another obsession. Constant obsession.
Outlander gifts. Of Jamie's butt.
Of Jamie and
on and on and on. Forever. Mine's real short and sweet. And I hope it's not going to sound too pandering. Because it is absolutely true. And it is from the heart.
Authentic. And yes.
I am so in love with This Sounds Serious, Dave's other true crime podcast. I have to remind myself that it is not real, that it is scripted, because it is so funny. It sounds so much like so many of the real true crime podcasts that I am also in love with. There's a new one called, there's a new season, I should say, of another podcast that I burned through the entire first season of it, and I cannot remember what it is called right now. Hang on one second. I'll look it up. In the Dark. And it's another true crime serial-style podcast, and the first season was this horrible, you know.
Each season its own story?
Each season is its own story, and the first season was about Jacob Wetterling. It was this heartbreaking story in the States of this kid that went missing and blah, blah, blah. And then so there's another season of that. So I listen to that, and then I'll put on the newest episode of This Sounds Serious. Ooh. And they sound, the production value is identical.
The style is the same.
The style, the phone calls, the, you know,
the personality,
walking up to the door, like all that background stuff, the way that the segments lead into, or the way that like the end of the podcast will like leave a cliffhanger leading into the next episode. So there's always, it's so well done. Dave, truly, it's really, really good. I love it. The guys who make that are hilarious comic geniuses. So funny. It's, as a true crime podcast enthusiast, you're nailing it.
Excellent. I enjoyed, in this most recent episode, there was a My Favorite Murder.
Yes.
Kind of satire happening. I was very excited
It's so funny. No. I have to be like, all right, this isn't real.
These people don't exist.
I'm genuinely caught up in the story. I am genuinely.
I want to know what happens. Because they're like halfway through the season. I think it was maybe a little bit more than halfway through. I think the episode 6 maybe just came out of 8. I forget what it is. Anyway.
I'm not sure how many will be out by the time this comes out. But they'll
probably might even be wrapped by the time this comes out.
It might. Yeah, June 5th was the most recent.
And I'm
one.
Not a true crime podcast obsession, like obsessor like you are. And I'm still super into it, too.
So what is going to happen? Who did it? It's so good. So I don't want to ramble on too long about it. But if you...
This sounds serious.
If you're interested, Dave, really and truly, and everyone who's participated with it, Pav Tompkins, you can know his little voice that comes in. That pumps you up.
Graham Clark comes in.
You're complimenting him too much. He's going to edit out your entire obsession.
You know what? Just keep in the part, This Sounds Serious is really good.
Thumbs up.
Just keep that. That's fine.
There you go.
Edit out as much as you feel is necessary, Dave. My hat is off.
Oh, boy. Well, awesome. Yes, that is a very good time.
We got to wrap this up.
Yeah, really it's getting late.
It is late.
And we have been taking up far too much of your time.
Yeah. But you love it, though.
But you love it.
It's not too bad. There are worse ways to spend an hour and 40 minutes.
Yeah, definitely.
You know, all the things you can do to find us. You can find us on Instagram. We are Fashion Eggs Podcast on Instagram. Mm-hmm. We're trying to get better at it. We've got some good stuff going lately, so that's fun.
Trying to keep that momentum.
Katie writes amazing copy for all of our posts.
Yes.
Not all of them. It's a shared burden.
But I feel like you set the tone.
Burden's the wrong word.
Job.
Task.
Set the tone. Because whenever there's a new moon when I post, 4 times a year, I try and follow the tone that Katie has set because it is so...
Yes. Mwah. It's perfect. Mwah. It's very on brand.
Well, I should say that Abby does all the featured images and they are my favorite thing of the whole thing.
They bring me joy.
They bring me great joy as well.
I'm excited.
Are you sitting in your joy?
I am. I'm plucking the ducks.
Tabora from Brene Brown. You need to sit in your joy.
This is spark joy. It's my Marie Kondo.
Oh.
It's spark joy, so I'm keeping
it. It sparks joy?
Yes.
You can find us on iTunes and leave a review.
Rate a review. Oh, please. It really helps.
Barbara, please.
We're not just asking to be complimented. It's like legitimately like helpful.
It legitimately bumps us up the list.
Yes.
And it makes it.
And there's more and more fashion podcasts out there. Because when we started, there was like 3.
Yeah, now there's.
And one of them was the Josie one that isn't even a thing anymore.
No.
Yeah.
So please help.
And one of them was Vogue and it was boring.
Yeah. Although.
Thank you for the Also, keep doing.
I mean, print media is absolutely your thing. Podcast, I mean,
exactly.
More fun.
Yeah,
that's what I'm saying.
Just saying.
Do you? Who has more to contribute to the international conversation about the fashion idiom? Fashion hags.
Yes. Who will give you a real talk?
Real talk.
Us.
Straight up.
You're not going to get too many dick jokes. No on chaser. Vogue podcast. Just saying.
Blowing smoke up people's asses.
Oh, and you're not going to get any critique for any of the people who advertise with them either.
That's the thing.
But I digress.
Anyway, guys, we love you.
We do. We really do. You know what, guys? We love fashion more.
Yep, it's true.
No lie.
Bye.
Love you. Bye.
Fashion. Hey.